One type of false witness is when one set of witnesses comes to say about a defendant and say that A killed B. The second set comes and says, we were there and A did not kill B. So therefore, we don't know who to accept, because both witnesses are saying the opposite of the other, and so therefore the defendant goes free. We can't do anything. Okay? But there's another type of false witness. Okay? And that is that one set of witnesses come and says A killed B. The second set says that A, we don't know if A killed B. We weren't there. But the first set of witnesses couldn't have seen it, because they say the murder took place on Tuesday at 5 p.m., okay, in Seattle. And at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, they were at Seattle time. They were with us in Chicago. Okay? So all we know is they cannot be there. They could not have testified. In this case, we believe the second set, even though the first set says we were there and the second set says we're not there, we do believe it. We believe the second set. The reason why we believe the second set, not because it's rational to believe them over the first, but because of the legal system. Because once the second set says that they could not have testified, the first set is in a new trial. It's not a murder trial anymore. It's a perjury. In the perjury trial, the first set of witnesses are the defendants. So they are not witnesses, and only the second set is witnesses. And so therefore, we only have one set of witnesses in this perjury trial, so therefore the first set are condemned. Is that clear? Is there any questions? Okay. Once again, the first witnesses are testifying to a murder, and they say A killed B. Now there is another trial where the first set of witnesses are the defendants in a perjury. And the only two witnesses that we have for the perjury trial is the second set of witnesses. Okay? So because of law, because of a legal system, we do not trust the first witnesses have no say. Even though they are saying we're two and they're two and we're contradicting them, they have no say because they're defendants. They do not have a say as a witness. They are now defendants. And all the laws of defendants are on them, not witnesses. So the defendant of the murder trial, he goes free. Since we said except the second set, so the first set is perjured. So after the trial of the first set, they're perjured. So then the defendant in the murder case goes free. Okay? Okay. Now the question is, what punishment does the perjured people, the perjured witnesses get? Okay. They, according to Torah, they get the same punishment what they wanted to do to the defendant. Okay? And therefore, if it's a death penalty trial and they're perjured, then they get the death penalty. If it's a whipping where they're testifying against a witness that they should be whipped, then they get whipped. And if they're testifying against the defendant that he owes money and they're perjured, then they have to pay the money. Okay, to the defendant. Okay, that is the punishment of the Adam Zelmerman. Adam Zelmerman is perjury. Now we come to our Mishnah. That was an introduction. And the our Mishnah, I have to give you the setup. I have to set up the facts about our Mishnah. Okay? A Kohen is not permitted to marry a divorcee. Okay? If a Kohen marries a divorcee and they have a son, that son is called a Cholol. Cholol means he is not a Kohen. He cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. He cannot eat truma that is only for the Kohen. He is like a regular, normal human being. He is not a Kohen. Is that correct? Okay. That's one case. The thing is, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee, but he violates the law and he marries a divorcee. That child is a Cholol. The father can, even though he violated the law, he's the one that violated the law, the father is still a Kohen. The child is not a Kohen. Okay? The child cannot. Now, we have a law of Yibum. Yibum is with the two brothers. And brother A marries a woman. And he has no children and he dies. There is a law that brother B should marry the dead brother's wife. Okay? That is called Yibum. What if he doesn't want to marry her? So he gives her Chalitza. Chalitza is equal to divorce. Just like divorce is a separation that separates a man and a woman when they're married, Chalitza separates a brother from marrying his dead brother's wife. Chalitza separates him. And a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Chalitza. In other words, there was a woman who was married to a man who died, and her brother-in-law gave her Chalitza. Okay? Now she never married that brother, the second brother she never married. She is a Chalitza. Now, if a Kohen violates the law and marries a Chalitza, and then that offspring, that son, from the son of a Chalitza, the father was a Kohen, and the mother was a Chalitza, he becomes a Cholol. He doesn't have the Kedusha. He doesn't have the holiness of a Kohen, and he cannot work in the Beis HaMikdash, and he cannot eat truma. Okay? That's the halacha. Now, the case in our Mishnah is this. Two witnesses came and said about a person. This is the defendant. He takes him to court and says, this person is either they say he's a Ben Gerusha, he's the son of a divorcee, or he's a Ben Chalutza, the son of a Chalutza, and therefore he cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and he cannot eat Truma. Okay? Then a second set comes and said that the first set are liars. At the time that they're saying that they know, however they prove, that a person is a Ben Gerusha or Ben Chalutza, they were with us in a different city, and they could not have known this fact. Okay? So they make these Adam Zomerman that are testifying about a Ben Gerusha or Ben Chalutza. Is that clear? Any questions? If those first two witnesses were Kohanim, okay, we do not say that they become a Cholol. A Cholol is a Kohen that does not have the Kedusha or holiness of a Kohen. Okay? We do not say they become a Cholol, but they get they get whipped 40, up to 40 lashes, 39 lashes. Okay? They do not get it. This case is a unique case. Okay? This case is unique. Okay? Even though they are Adam Zelmerman, they do not get punished like Adam Zelmerman. They get whipped. Okay? 39 lashes. They do not get punished like Adam Zelmerman. I would just like to clarify that the son is the defendant, not the father. The father might have violated the halacha, but he's not on trial. Our Mishnah is dealing with the son, whether he is a Kohen, he has the Kedusha, the holiness of a Kohen, so he could serve on the Beis HaMikdash and eat Truma, or whether he cannot, or whether he's a Cholel and cannot. So therefore, the father is not on trial here. What the halacha is, if the false witness, the Adam Zelmerman, are not Kohanim, that's not our discussion. They definitely cannot become a Cholel. Our case is where, if the witnesses are Kohanim, even then, those Kohanim do not become a Cholel. They do not take the place of the defendant. Okay, even though they've proven Zelman, this case is unique. It's different than any other case. Their punishment is different than the punishment that's usually applied to Adam Zelman. Their punishment is they get up to 40 lashes. Okay, not 40, up to 40. Okay, that's what the Mishnah is dealing with. Right. The everything is the same about how they become Adam Zelman. Our Mishnah is only discussing a unique case of punishing Adam Zelman. That the punishment is not like the Torah prescribes for Adam Zelman. This case is unique. The question is, by a chalutza, what happened? Okay, by a ben chalutza. There was a woman who, there were two brothers, not Kohanim. They were not Kohanim. But she married one, and he died. Let's start again. If a woman marries a man, and her husband dies, and there's no brother, okay? Her husband dies, whether she has children or doesn't have children, a Kohen is allowed to marry. Kohen is allowed to marry that. He's not allowed to marry a divorcee, but he's allowed to marry a widow, okay? Our case, by a chalutza, is she was married to a man and he died, so she's a widow. But she died without children. Now the brother doesn't want to marry her, which according to law he should marry her. The law of Yibam, he should marry her. But he decides he doesn't want to, so he gives a chalutza. Right, this woman is a chalutz, right? She had chalutza. Now a Kohen marries her. The Kohen is not allowed to marry her, but he violates the law and he marries her. He is still a Kohen. Okay? But their offspring becomes a Cholel. Now two witnesses testified about a person that he was the son of a Chalutza, and the second two witnesses make the first two witnesses Zelmerman. We do not say that if the first said were Kohanim, they become Cholel because of a Cholut, but they get 40 lashes. Right, we're up to the last two lines of the Mishnah. And there is such a place as Golos. Golos is exile. Okay? There are three levels of murder. The three levels of killing. One type of killing is murder, premeditated murder, and you're supposed to get the death penalty. Okay? Or sometimes we don't have enough witnesses, you don't get the death penalty. But anyway, that's premeditated murder. Okay? Intentional murder. The last level, the opposite end, is onus. accidental. Okay? I have no intention of hurting you. There's it's not my fault at all. And somehow I killed you. Okay? That's nothing. You know what I mean? I go home and that's it. Goodbye, it's over. Then there's the middle case. The middle case, the Chumash tells the story of somebody's chopping wood and the axe head separates from the handle and kills somebody. Okay? That is called shogeg or negligence. Negligence means that I should have made sure that the axe is tightened to the handle, and I didn't do that. That's called negligence. And I killed a guy, it flew off because it wasn't on tight, and it flew off and killed somebody. That is called shogeg or negligence. The punishment is that I have to run to a city of refuge. Okay? There are cities of refuge, and all these cities that the Levium, the Levites, had cities throughout Eretz Israel, their own cities. They didn't have a portion in the land of Israel like a set place. They had cities throughout the country. All the cities that they live in are cities of refuge. There were six cities set up specially as cities of refuge. What's the difference between those six and all the other cities of the Levites? That's a discussion in the Gemara that maybe we'll get to or not. Okay? But the fact is that they ran to these cities. Okay? In other words, now if they did not run, in other words, this is set, now this is not vengeance, this was a court case. It was a court case, and as soon as they were condemned, they were given a head start to run, and then a family member was appointed to have the right to kill him. That was part of the legal system. You can't just do it on your own. And as long as the guy is not in the city of refuge, this person, this family member, is allowed to kill him. If he stays in the city of refuge, the family member is not allowed in. If he ever leaves, the family member can kill him. He's not allowed to leave the city of refuge until the Kohen Gadol dies. Okay? If you happen to be in the city of refuge one day and the Kohen Gadol dies, you're free. If he lives for another 30 years, then you're stuck there for 30 years. It is all dependent on the life of the Kohen Gadol. Now, our Mishnah says, let's say two witnesses come and say that this guy deserves to be in Golos, to run to one of the cities of refuge. And then we find that they're Edom Zomimim. Okay? We do not say that they have to go in Golos in its place, but they get Golos. They get lashes. They get 40 lashes. The subject of our Mishnah is two cases that are exceptions to the law of punishment of Edom Zomimim. The word ha introduces a contradiction. Okay? Ketzad how ein ha Edom nasim zomim. Witnesses are not made Edom Zomimim. The Gemara's contradiction is like this. First of all, you have to know that a contradiction... Well, let me ask the question. How many statements does a contradiction have? Contradiction must have two statements. You'll notice that the Gemara only wrote one statement. Okay? They assume you could figure out what the other statement is. Okay? Okay. Now, in our Mishnah, it says, how are witnesses made Zomimim? And then it explains how they do not get punished like regulated Zomimim. So the Gemara is asking, that is not the way to express that statement. The way to express it is, how are witnesses not made Edom Zomimim? How do they not get the same punishment as Edom Zomimim? How are these witnesses different? You understand? That's what it should have said. It's not how they're made zomimim. Okay? So we're asking a contradiction against the term. The way they're expressing this idea, the Gemara is saying, is incorrect. And they should have expressed it a different way. So if I asked you, what are the two statements that contradict each other, what would you say? The two statements that are in contradiction, okay? The first one is our Mishnah, where it says, how are witnesses made false? The second statement is, it should have stated that they, how are witnesses not made Zomimim, meaning that they do not get the same punishment as Zomimim. It's different. You understand? That's the contradiction. Now, starting from the word Ve'od, and furthermore, is another contradiction. Okay? We're going to try to explain the two contradictions. They're slightly different. The Gemara will answer both contradictions in one answer. But however, we have to understand the question and the difference between the two questions. The first question is, the punishment in the Mishnah is unique. It's not the normal type of Edom Zomimim. Okay? The punishment is not the same. So therefore, the Gemara should have asked, the terminology that it uses, it says, how are Edom made Zomimim? What they should have said, how are they not made Zomimim? Because it has a different type of punishment. So they're not exactly like Zomimim. So it should have said, how are they not made Zomimim? So the way they formulated the question, the Gemara is saying is wrong. That's the first question. The second question is that there is a Gemara later that says, they talk about precisely what is Edom Zomimim. And it says very clearly, which the Gemara quotes, they want to say exactly what an Edom Zomimim is. It says the second set says to the first set, how could you have testified in that day, meaning at that time, in that place? Because you were with us in a different place at that time. Okay? Now, since that is Edom Zomimim, that implies that what we're saying here is not Edom Zomimim. In other words, let's accept the question. Forget about the first question. The Mishnah asks, how is it? Forget about the first question in the Gemara. The Mishnah asks, how do you make Edom Zomimim? Well, there's another Mishnah. How do you make Edom Zomimim? It should have said what this Mishnah said. How do you make Edom Zomimim? You tell the second set says to the first set, you were with us at the time that you say you saw the defendant do the wrong thing, right? So therefore, they're not answering the question altogether. They're not dealing with how you make Zomimim. They're dealing with how you punish Edom Zomimim. They're dealing with how do you punish? There's a different type of punishment. They're not dealing with the question. The question is altogether ridiculous. They are not answering the question, how do you make Edom Zomimim? How do you make Edom Zomimim? That's the further Mishnah that tells us exactly where we'll discuss it, exactly how you make Edom Zomimim. The question is wrong. The question is totally wrong. It's not telling us how to make Edom Zomimim. We're telling you how to punish Edom Zomimim. You understand? So there are two distinct questions. The first question is on the Mishnah's question. When the Mishnah says, how do you make Edom Zomimim? We're answering that the punishment is different than Edom Zomimim. So it should say, how do you not make Edom Zomimim? Not that they're not Edom Zomimim, but it means, how is their punishment different? So it's not how you make Edom Zomimim, it's how you are not. You don't get the punishment of Edom Zomimim. That should be the question. You understand? Right. The question is that what's the difference how you formulate the question? It's still the same thing, right? The answer is that our sages were very, very precise. And there's one way that the question makes sense, and there's one way that the question is not it does not make sense. Okay? And because of that, we have to explain. In other words, we say, the Gemara say, that the Mishnah, the authors of the Mishnah, must have had something in mind. When they ask this question, they're saying, they must have had something in mind here. You understand? Because that is not the correct way of formulating. That's very precise. That is the first question. The second question is slightly different. Why? Because when it says, how do you make Adam Zelmerman, you have to tell me, per the Mishnah, where it says that how you make Adam Zelman. The second says to the first, that you couldn't have testified about this defendant because you were with us in a different place at that time. You understand? Here we're saying, we're talking about the punishment. The punishment of Adam Zelman, not how you are made Adam Zelman. Should have said, how are you punished? How are Adam Zelman punished? Should have said, how do you make Adam Zelman? Should have said, how Adam Zelman are punished. So therefore, these cannot be Adam Zelman. Based on the punishment, they're not Adam Zelman. And how do you make Adam Zelman? That's a different Gemara. In other words, your question, the answer over here, does not answer the question. Okay? The answer to the question of how do you make Zelman is the second set says to the first set, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Whatever they say. Okay? But our Mishnah is answering how you punish Adam Zelman. And they're not even punishing him correctly. So the whole answer has nothing to do with Adam Zelman. They don't get punished like Adam Zelman. They're not telling us how you make Adam Zelman. So that was a different Mishnah, how you make Adam Zelman. The question shows that there is some idea or some information that is missing. Okay? So therefore, these two questions show that there's something about the Mishnah that we really don't understand. That's what the Gemara will clarify, what we're missing in the Mishnah. They'll explain that. Okay. What we're saying is, the first question is, the question is wrong. And even if you say that is the question, the answer is wrong. Again, the first question, okay? When you say the answer is punishment, that you get punished different than regular Adam Zelman, then you have to say, the question should be, how are you not like Adam Zelman? Not how do you make Adam Zelman, but how are you not like Adam Zelman? That should have been the question. That's the Gemara's question. That's the first question of the Gemara. Okay? Right. We're now going to answer the question, the two questions, okay? The Makos follows the Gemara Sanhedrin, okay? And in the last Perek of Sanhedrin, they talk about different death penalties, different people that deserve strangulation, okay? Now, there are four different death penalties, and they go through all those that deserve chenek, okay? One of them happens to be that Adam Zelman that testified against the Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, that was married, and she had an affair, and they were testifying against her. Okay, because the reason that why matters that she's a Bas Kohen, because every married woman that has an affair does not get Sreifa. Only the Bas Kohen, the Torah tells us that the Bas Kohen gets Sreifa, that's burning, but everyone else, every other Ashes is, in other words, so on the Ashes is, she gets Chenek, but however, Bas Kohen that's married, okay, she gets Sreifa. For some reason, she gets a different punishment, and it's derived from verses. You don't have to know the verses, okay? But anyway, now these two witnesses come and say, we saw this Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, have an affair.
and they want to cause her to get straight for Bernie. Is that correct? What she does get, then we find that the two witnesses are false witnesses. They do not get Srefa, but they get Chenek. They get strangulation, this strangle. Okay? Okay? Now, therefore, the Gemara says that when it says, how are witnesses made Zelmanim, without omission, and Makos asks it, the words itself does not make sense, because it's not answering the question. You understand? But if you could put it in the context of the last Mishnah, then it does make sense. Okay? If you put it in the context of the last Mishnah says, there are Adam Zelman that get the death penalty, but not the same death penalty. They get a different one. Okay? And there is another set of Adam Zelman that get a punishment that is totally different. And the question is, how are they different? Okay? Who are these Adam Zelman that are different? That is the question. Ketzad Adam Nasan Zelman. How are Mishnah that asks the question, how are witnesses made Zelman? Meaning, how are they, based on the last Mishnah, the context of the last Mishnah, it's how are witnesses punished? Based on the last one, how are witnesses punished differently, totally? Over there, they're punished, at least with the death penalty, just a different one. But over here, the punishment is totally different. So the question is, how are these witnesses punished totally differently? And the reason why we have the right to put in punished, because we're saying that it's continued from the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin, because Makos follows Sanhedrin. So therefore, since it follows in that context, the meaning of how are these made Zelman, how are this punishment of Adam Zelman totally different than what they wanted to give to the defendant? And that our Mishnah is answering. So now the question makes sense and the answer makes sense.
We're going to go over the answer again, okay? Right. The thing is that there was a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Makos follows the Gemara Sanhedrin. And in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, in the last parak of Sanhedrin, they have cases where you get the death penalty of Chenek. One of them is Zelmanim of a Bas Kohen. They say the daughter of a Kohen who was married had an affair. She deserves Srefa, that's burning. And this Mishnah in Sanhedrin says that if these two witnesses are found Zelman, they do not get Srefa, but they get Chenek. Does everybody understand? Now, the thing is our Mishnah, when it says, how are witnesses made Zelman, it's these words by itself, it should have answered that if the second two witnesses come, it says you were with us in Chicago when you say you're in Seattle at that time. Okay? That would be the answer. But if you put it in the context of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, then those same words, how do you make witnesses Zelman, have a totally different meaning? Okay? If you put it in the context of the last Mishnah. In other words, do you understand that if you take words in one by itself, they mean one thing. If sometimes you put the same words in a different context, and it means something else. You understand? So the same words can mean something else if you put it in a different context.
Once again, the words, how do you make witnesses Zelman, we have to say the answer like the Gemara said, not like the Mishnah said. Namely, the second two witnesses say to the first two witnesses, you could not have seen this situation occur. That's what the words mean. But if I say that this statement, how do you make witnesses Zelman, is following that case of where the Adam Zelman get the death penalty, but not the same death penalty as the defendant, right? If it's following that, in that case, it goes like this. There is a case in Sanhedrin where Adam Zelman get the death penalty, but not the exact death penalty that they wanted to give the defendant. Now I want to know, how can you give Adam Zelman a punishment
that's totally different than what they wanted to give to the defendant. That is what, how do you make Adam Zelman? In other words, since it's following the context of where they don't get the same punishment, so this is just an extension of how do you make Adam Zelman not get the same punishment. Once you put it in the context of the Mishnah and Sanhedrin.
But the Mishnah and Sanhedrin say that they do not get the same death penalty. Now we're saying, how do they get punished totally different than what they wanted to give to the defendant? So therefore, when they say, how do you make him Zelman, it's going on what? On the punishment, not on how do you make Adam Zelman. But it's going on the punishment in the context of the last parak of Sanhedrin.
We're going to clarify again the question and answer. Basically, the both questions that the Gemara asks is saying that the question is asking one thing and the answer is saying something else. That's basically it, okay? The question is asking, how do you make Adam Zelman? The answer should be, well, the second two witnesses say, the first two witnesses were with us in a different city at that time, that they claim to have seen the murder, okay? But we don't answer that. We say that you get punished differently. You understand? So therefore, that's basically the question. The answer is, you are 100% right. The words of the question and the answer do not fit in. The words of the question are saying one thing, and the answer is saying something else. It's not answering the question. But, however, the question changes if you put it in a certain context. Okay? The last Mishnah, the last parak of Sanhedrin, which is, and Marcos comes, follows that. Our Gemara follows that. Our Gemara is following that. Okay? What does it say there? It says there that there is a person that get, there are Adam Zelman that get a death penalty, but it's different than the death penalty that they wanted to give the defendant. Therefore, you are punished somehow. These Adam Zelman are punished slightly differently. In other words, they get the death penalty, but they get a different death penalty. So they're punished slightly differently than the defendant. Okay? That was in Sanhedrin. So the Gemara is saying, based on that, how can you make Adam Zelman get punished differently? In other words, when it says, how do you make Adam Zelman, it means it's following in the context, how do you make Adam Zelman punished differently? You understand? Because before, they were punished slightly different. Now we can extend it that you punish totally different. But the question makes sense in the framework. You said they're punished differently, so how can you make Adam Zelman be punished different than the defendant? And here we're just adding totally different. You understand? So the same words, if you just look at the words by themselves, they say one thing. When you look at it in the context of the last parak of the Sanhedrin, so then it becomes, the same words become totally different. The Gemara asks the question, what is the source in the Torah? Okay? Which means that the, in other words, where did the Mishnah get its information that where there's a Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, you get lashes, and the witnesses do not take the place of the defendant, that they become Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza? We want to know what is the source in the Torah. Okay, meaning that that is where the Mishnah got its information from. Right? So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says that it says in a pasuk, that you should do to him like he wanted to do. Okay? In other words, and let's say the defendant would have been a real Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. What would have happened? What would have happened is that he would have become a Chalal. The Chalal is a Kohen that cannot serve on the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? But not only he would have become a Chalal, but all his children and all his descendants would have also become a Chalal. So therefore, we are saying that we could do to the defendant some punishment, but we cannot do to his children that punishment. That's why, because we made a deduction, because it says in the pasuk, you should do to him, namely the him meaning the aid zomam, the false witness, to what he wanted to do, right? So he says, like he lied, right? We should do to him like he lied, right? So the thing is that, but not his children. Now, since here we would be not only making him a chalal, but his children a chalal, so therefore we can't give him the punishment. Okay? So we're talking about an aid zomam, that's a kohen. Okay? Now the Gemara says, okay, let's take, in other words, instead of making the aid zomam a ben grusha ben chalutza, what did they want to accomplish? They wanted to accomplish that the defendant cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So why don't we take that part? Instead of making the aid zomam, the false witness, a ben grusha ben chalutza, let's just say he cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, he's a chalal, but his children can. So we'll disqualify him from serving in the Beis HaMikdash, but we won't disqualify his children. Okay? So therefore, we're doing to him what he wanted to do to the defendant and not to him. Okay? So we'll do it to the Eid Zoma. So the Gemara says, because it says in the Pasuk, like he lied to do. Okay? What was the lie to do? The lie would accomplish, what the lie would do would be that he would make the defendant partial, disqualified, and his children disqualified. And here you're only disqualifying him. That's not what he wanted to do. Well, he didn't want to only disqualify the defendant. He wanted to disqualify the defendant and the children. And if we only disqualify the witness, so then we're not doing to him what he wanted to do. You understand? He lied to do something, and we're not doing to him what he lied to do. You understand? So therefore, we can't give him the punishment what he wanted to do, and therefore the only thing left is 40 lashes. But a little clarification on the last part of the Gemara, okay? What we want to do is to do to the false witness, the aid zomam, what he wants to do to the defendant. Okay? The question is, do we have to do the whole thing, or could we be partial? Okay? The whole thing over here is, what did he want to do to the defendant? He wanted to make him a chalal and his children a chalal. Is that correct? That would be, so therefore, what we should do is make the aid zomam that he becomes a chalal and his children become a chalal. Okay? So we say, no, we can't do that. We can't make his children a chalal. We can't do that because of the deduction of the pasuk. Okay? So the Gemara says, okay, so let's do to him only what he wanted to do to the defendant and not what he wanted to do to the defendant's children. What did he want to do to the defendant? Just make him a chalal. So let's punish him that he becomes a chalal, but it's meaning the aid zomam becomes a chalal and not his children. Okay? So the Gemara says that is not fulfilling the verse. It says that you should do to him what he lied to do to the defendant. It's only a partial thing. It's not the total. You understand? And the pasuk says you must do totally what he wanted to do. Okay? Totally. You can't say, okay, he wanted to do A and B, we'll only punish him with A. You can't do that. If we wanted to punish him with A and B, you must punish him with A and B. And if you can't punish him with A and B, like in this case, we can't punish him with A and B, so then we can't do that punishment. Therefore, the only thing that's left is lashes, 40 lashes. Is that right? Barpada, that's the next author, gives a different reason for our Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah said that you get lashes, that the Adam Zomerman get lashes instead of getting the punishment, what they wanted to give the defendant. He's going to prove it in a different way. And he proves it through Kal v'chomer. Kal v'chomer is a deduction, a deducing from the Torah through a special method, the way the Torah was written, so we can deduce it from the Torah. Okay? Now, the Kal v'chomer means you go from the lower level to the higher level. Okay? The lower level is like this. The father who causes his son to become a chalal, okay? A chalal is a person that cannot work in the Beis HaMikdash. But he himself does not become a chalal. That's the law. The law is that if a man marries a divorcee, he does not become a chalal, but he causes his children to become a chalal. So the first step of the kal is he who causes somebody else to become a chalal, but he himself is not a chalal. Okay, that's one side. Now, Adam Zomerman are coming to make the defendant a chalal. But to be an Adam Zomam, you cannot accomplish what you wanted to do. In other words, once the court case is over and they made a decision that you are Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, that you're the son of a divorcee or the son of a Chalutza, then you cannot become an Eid Zomam anymore after the decision. Okay? You can only be, right? He has not accomplished what he wanted to. So the Gemara says he definitely should not become a Chalal. From a Kal v'chomer, he should not become a Chalal. Okay? That is the Kal v'chomer, the way the Gemara writes it. Okay? Now let me clarify. Okay? There is a relationship. In the Kal v'chomer, there is the lower level is a relationship. Okay? The relationship here is that you, from these two facts, I see that the first person accomplishes what he wanted to do, but he himself does not become a chalal. In other words, he accomplishes that these children become a chalal. By accomplish, I mean he didn't desire to do this, but it's a result of his actions. Okay? So his children become a chalal. He does not. So what do we see from this fact? We see from these facts that where you put into actuality the result, you still, in other words, you're causing somebody else to be affected in a bad way, but you are not affected in a bad way, right? So how much more so if you only try to accomplish, but you don't succeed, right? In other words, in the case of the Adam Zomerman, where they tried to make them Adam Zomerman, but they didn't accomplish it because the court wasn't closed. They didn't close the case yet. They didn't accomplish it. So the Adam Zomerman should certainly not be punished. In other words, where you're not punished where you accomplish it, you certainly should not be punished where you don't accomplish it. The reason why the Adam Zomerman did not succeed, because before the trial was over, There was a second set of witnesses came and said, these are liars, these are Eid Zaman, because they're in a different place at the time that they were testified that they saw, that they knew this fact. You understand? So they were made Eid Zaman. So they never accomplished what they wanted to do. So they certainly shouldn't be punished by coming to Halal. They shouldn't get that punishment. That's how Bapada explains the reasoning for our Mishnah, why the Adam Zelman don't get the punishment that they wanted to give the defendant. That's how he explains how the Mishnah came to this conclusion. Bapada is not he's not asking a contradiction on the last answer. He's only giving a different explanation than the last answer of why the Mishnah says that this case of Ben Gerusha and Ben Chalutza, that they do not get the same punishment. He's giving the reason why, and it's not a deduction like from the Pesukim, like the method that the last part gave, that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi or Rish Lakish gave, but he has his own method of interpreting, and he brings it from a Kal V'Chomer. Okay? The Kal V'Chomer that we just said. Ravina is going to show a contradiction against Barpada. Okay? And the way he shows the contradiction is by creating a Kal V'Chomer in the exact way that Bapada created his Kal V'Chomer. Ravina is going to create another Kal V'Chomer that will show that the whole law of Adam Zomerman falls by the wayside, which is impossible because the Torah says that Adam Zomerman, that would be a Kal V'Chomer against the Torah. And we cannot accept the Kal V'Chomer against the Torah. So therefore, that would be the contradiction. Okay, and I will now show you the Kal V'Chomer. Bapada's Kal V'Chomer was based on this fact, that something that actually happened, and you don't get, in other words, where you want to accomplish a sin, where you accomplish something wrong, and you don't get punished for it, certainly where you try to do something and you don't accomplish it, you certainly should not be punished for it. Is that correct? That was about Pardes Kal V'Chomer. So now, the law of Adam Zomerman happens to be that if you go to court, and before the court case closes, the second two witnesses say, you are Adam Zomerman, then the Adam Zomerman get the punishment. But however, if you accomplish it, the court is closed, and we actually kill the guy based on your testimony, and then we find out you're Adam Zomerman, then you don't get the punishment of Adam Zomerman. Okay? It sounds, I understand there seems to be something unfair about this, but we must accept this fact. Okay? This is what God wants, okay? Why he wants it, that's a different problem. That's not our problem. We're only dealing with the fact, not why God made the fact, okay? God made the fact that if you wanted to kill somebody, then you are an Eid Zomam. You accomplish it, then you are not an Eid Zomam. So therefore, based on that, Ravina says, using your method of a Kal V'Chomer, I'll show you there's no more laws of Eid Zomam. Okay, so the Kal V'Chomer goes like this, okay? Adam Zomerman that accomplished that they actually got the defendant killed, they don't get stealing, right? So where a person came and tried to get him killed with Skila, with stoning, but was not successful, so he should certainly not get Skila. Is that correct? So therefore, that removes all the laws of Adam Zomerman, because you're making the Kal V'Chomer that where you're successful, you don't get that. So therefore, the Kal Vachomer should be where you're not successful, that you should, the halacha is that you do get that, but according to the Kal Vachomer, you should not get that. So therefore, you've undone the whole law of Adam's elements. In other words, the halacha is just the opposite of the Kal Vachomer. But the question is that, does this Kal Vachomer make sense? I mean, if you say the Kal Vachomer, how does the halacha make sense? The halacha is saying that that when you're successful, then you don't get punishment, right? But when you are when you try to accomplish it and you don't accomplish it, then the Adam Zomim do get the punishment. Okay? So that doesn't sound to make sense. Okay? The answer is like this. And I'm only explaining the answer in the framework of halacha. I'm not explaining it philosophically. Insofar as everyday life is concerned, trying and not being successful in something bad is not as bad as trying and being successful. Okay? In everyday life, that would be true. Okay? But God is telling me to make a Kal Vachomer, you must have a quantitative difference between the two things, because you're measuring something, so there has to be a quantitative difference. There's a qualitative difference. Qualitative means that they're two separate things, so then you can't make a Kal Vachomer. What the Torah is telling me by the laws of Adam Zomanim, that in reality, trying and not being successful is not as bad as trying and being successful. Okay? But however, God is saying, insofar as halacha is concerned, it's not a quantitative difference. The difference between trying and being successful and trying and not being successful is not a quantitative difference. They are two separate qualities. And since they are two separate qualities, I cannot make a Kal Vachomer. That's what the Torah is telling me. So trying and occur and causing is a qualitative difference in halacha, then Papada cannot make his Kal Vachomer. Okay? Therefore, Papada cannot make his Kal Vachomer. Okay, so the Gemara says, they quote the Mishnah saying, that the Mishnah says that the Adam Zomerman, the false witnesses, testify about a man that he should go to one of the cities of refuge, okay, because he killed somebody by negligence. So then the Mishnah says that they don't send the two false witnesses to the cities of refuge like he wanted to do, but what he gets is 40 lashes. So the Gemara wants the proof. What's the proof for the Mishnah? That they don't get the exact punishment, but they get the 40 lashes. They get a totally different punishment. So Rish Lakish has a very simple proof. It says, because the pasuk says he should run. In other words, the person they killed by negligence, he should run to one of the cities of refuge. So it says he. So the implication is he should run and not the false witnesses. So because of a deduction in the pasuk, you can't punish the false witnesses for what they wanted to do. So the only thing that's left is the 40 lashes. Rabbi Yochanan, that was Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says the reason why they don't run to the Hore Miklat, okay, he's going to prove why they don't go to run to the city of refuge, is because he has the Kal Vachomer. What's the Kal Vachomer? Okay. The Kal Vachomer, I'll just go over the idea, okay, is measuring an act and a non-act. Okay? The Torah holds that you are more punishable for an act than for speech. Speech, insofar as halacha is concerned, I'm not talking about according to hashkafa or philosophy. According to halacha, an act is more punishable than speech. speech is not defined as an act. There is the only time you can get makas for a speech is ezama. Okay? But otherwise, there is no time where you get makas for speech. You get makas for an act, for different actions. Okay? Right? So that's what they're measuring. So what the Kal Vachomer says, and just like he that didn't act on purpose, right? In other words, a guy that kills on purpose. Einu gola. He does not go to the city of refuge. He that does not do an act on purpose. In other words, what's a non-act on purpose? Speech. We're talking about the Adam Zoman. So when it says he does not do an act on purpose, the emphasis is not on the purpose. The emphasis is on the act. He did not act on purpose. He spoke on purpose, but he didn't act on purpose. You understand? Because speech is not considered an act according to halacha. So once again, okay? The Kal Vachomer is like this. He who doesn't act on purpose, in other words, he murders. Somebody murders on purpose, does not go to one of the cities of refuge. Okay? So somebody that doesn't do an act, he's doing it, he's speaking on purpose, but it's not considered an act, so he should definitely not go to one of the cities of refuge. Now, once again, a Kal Vachomer is made on measuring two levels of equality, okay? Now, when you do a wrong act, when you do a sin, let's put this way. When you do a sin, there are two levels. There's an act and a non-action. Once again, they're measuring two qualities. If you do a sin, not two qualities, two levels of equality. In sinning, there's two levels of the sin. There's an act and what we say a non-act. A non-act is when I do a sin by speech. In halacha, an act is more punishable than speech. In other words, when I sin by speech, like I don't get lashes, there's no punishment for speaking lashon hara. God will deal with it. Now, that's a terrible act. It's a prohibition of the Torah. So the thing is that philosophically, it's a terrible act. Okay? But halacha, when it comes to punishment, they make a distinction, the halacha makes a distinction between an act and what we call a non-act, that's speech. Okay? Okay? So therefore, an act is more punishable than a person that just speaks. Okay? Now, if you kill somebody on purpose, you don't run to the cities of refuge. You can't. Even, let's say, you did a sin that you don't get in such a way that you don't get the death penalty. Okay? So you don't run to the city of refuge. Okay? City of refuge is not an option. Okay? Now, so the Kal Vachomer goes like this. If you killed somebody on purpose, you do not go to the city of refuge. Right? What if you don't do an act on purpose? In other words, you're an Eid Zoma. That's not considered an act. That's just speech. And you purposely wanted to get somebody to go to the city of refuge, right? So therefore, but you did a non-act on purpose. If you do an act on purpose, then you don't go to the city of refuge. So definitely, if you do a non-act on purpose, which is speech, you definitely shouldn't go to the city of refuge.
So a non-act is worse than an act.
No, an act is more punishable. So therefore, since we say here where you did an act, you are not punished. So therefore, where you're not doing an act, where it's only speech, like by the Adam Zomerman, it's only speech, they definitely should not go to the city of refuge. In other words, we're just talking about the punishment of running to the city of refuge. The Adam Zomerman are obligating the defendant to go to the city of refuge. Okay? They say he killed somebody through negligence. So therefore, he's obligated to go to the city of refuge. So therefore, according to the laws of Eid Zomam, the Eid Zomamim should go to the city of refuge. So what
what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, from a kal v'chomer they shouldn't go. What's the kal v'chomer? Because since somebody that does an act on purpose, what does that mean, an act on purpose? He kills somebody on purpose, right? He does not go to the city of refuge, right? So you who does not do an act, you only did speech, which halachically is a non-act, so you definitely should not go to the cities of refuge, even though it's on purpose. That's his proof why the Mishnah says that if you testify falsely against somebody, that you're obligated to go to the city of refuge, therefore they should not go, therefore the Edom Zomer does not go to the city of refuge. The question was that he gets a worse punishment, the guy that murdered, he gets the death penalty, therefore he can't go to the city of refuge. The answer is that there was some technicality that we couldn't give him the death penalty. So since we couldn't give him the death penalty, so he was still in all, he can't run to the city of refuge. We are proving why they don't get to run to the city of refuge what they wanted to do to the defendant. That's what both Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is coming to prove. Rish Lakish proved it through a pasuk, and Rabbi Yochanan is proving it through a kal v'chomer, that they should not get the punishment, what they wanted to do, to the defendant. We're not dealing what punishment they should get or why they get malchus. We're not dealing with that problem. We're only dealing with the problem why they do not get the punishment, what they wanted to do to the defendant. That's all we're dealing with. Okay. What the Gemara is going to do now is going to show that this kal v'chomer, really, if you use this kal v'chomer, that it comes out that the opposite is true. Okay? And this is the way the Gemara does it. Now, the first thing you have to know, that halachically, whenever you get punished, with tshuva, the punishment helps undo the sin. Okay? When you have a sin, according to halacha, tshuva plus the punishment undoes the sin. Okay? Now, so therefore, if you look at the same fact from the purpose of kapara, okay? Now, so the thing is like this. He says, if you do an act on purpose, you do an act on purpose, the reason why you cannot go to Golas, because Golas is not enough to cause you kapara, to cause forgiveness. You need a higher punishment to get forgiveness. It doesn't work for you. You see? But where you only do a verbal harm, which is a lower thing, a lower act of evil, okay? It's not an act. It's not an act, halachically. So therefore, in an halacha where it's a non-act, like speech, So there it's considered a lower thing. So therefore, it could be that in that case, you should get galus because it is a lower thing since it's lower than the act. So maybe you should get galus so that that's enough to forgive you. You understand? So therefore, it should come out just the opposite of what you said. In other words, you're looking at it from punishment point of view, of the harshness of the punishment, but if you look at it from kapara point of view, then it comes out just the opposite. It can come out the opposite. It doesn't have to, but it can come out the opposite. Once again, gentlemen, once again, okay? The thing is kapara atonement, or forgiveness, according to Allah, comes about where you get punished plus tshuva, okay? Plus repentance, okay? Now, in other words, if you don't repent and you get the punishment, that doesn't help. We're obligated to give you the punishment. Your responsibility is to repent on your sins. Then the punishment helps. It atones or forgives your sins. Right? That's the way you can get rid of your sins. Okay? If that is true, So the level of punishment would also be for the level of sin, because punishment is part of forgiving you for a sin, which is a good thing. In other words, you can look at punishment as the harshness of the punishment, that we want to punish you, so there's the harshness. Or we could look at punishment as a means for forgiveness, that God will forgive us for the sin. Okay? All right. So if you look at it that way, you look at it for forgiveness of the sin, so maybe the reason why a person that murders on Mazes, it's not a possibility, that is the fact. A person that murders on Mazes, a person that kills purposefully, okay, the punishment of Golus, of going into exile, is not enough to give him atonement, to give him forgiveness. He needs something more. He needs the death penalty, right? But going to exile will not help. But however, it is possible that somebody that does a lower level of sin, namely the Adam Zomerman, that they're only speaking, they're not doing an act, they're speaking, okay, which is a lower level of punishment, it is possible maybe they do go to Golus. It's possible that they, in other words, according to the Kal Vachomer, it comes out just the opposite. It's possible that they do come to Golus, and therefore you are not proving from the Mishnah what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah says that you don't get Golus, that you don't get exile for Adam Zomerman, right? And we're saying, according to your Kal Vachomer, if you look at it from a slightly different angle, it is possible that they should get Golus, but that's the punishment that they should get. It's the punishment that they should get for their kapara, for their forgiveness or atonement. This is not another Kal Vachomer. It's just saying that you can't compare the two. You're making a comparison between the two, and you're saying that if the higher level of punishment, namely death, doesn't go to Golus, so certainly this person should not go to Golus, right? We're saying you can't make that comparison because from another angle, from Kapara, that you can't compare the two. There's no comparison. There's no Kal Vachomer. The difference from before, when we accepted the Kal Vachomer to not accepting the Kal Vachomer, the difference is what you're measuring. If you're measuring punishment, then the Kal Vachomer works. If you're measuring kapara, then the Kal Vachomer doesn't work. So he says, why are you choosing the quality of punishment to measure it that way? Why don't you measure it from here? So since you can measure it from kapara, therefore you don't have a proof for the Kal Vachomer. You haven't proven that it has to be based on the harshness of the punishment. You haven't proven that, and there's another quality which could be working here, namely kapara. So if that is true, you don't have a proof. Okay, there is a machlokas. Rav Chista is one person, and we're soon going to have Rav Papa. We're just going to do today Rav Chista, okay? The Gemara wants to know who's the author that holds that kufra, that ransom, is forgiveness. When you have a ransom, it's forgiveness. So Rav Chista says, he quotes a braisa, okay? The braisa that he quotes is a pasuk. Says, and he shall give a ransom for his soul. Okay?
Right.
So it says that he should give a ransom for his soul. The question is, who's the his? Whose soul is it? So the Tanna Kamma holds that, the Tanna Kamma means the first author, doesn't mention who he is, holds that you evaluate the victim, the one that was killed by the ox, you evaluate how much he was worth, okay? Now, how do you evaluate? Really, you can't give a value on a person's life, but since you have to pay money, So the way they evaluated, they say, how much would this guy be worth in the slave market? So depending how strong he was, how what gender he is, what he could do, you understand? So what? So the thing is that they, whatever he would be worth in the slave market, that's the value that he gets, okay? So he says, when it says his, what does it mean, his soul? It means the victim, okay? Now, Rabbi Yishmael says that it means the value of the mazik. The mazik is the person, is the killer or the assailant. In other words, whose ox did the killing, he's the one that did the damage. So he's we'll call him the killer, okay? So the thing is, so we evaluate him. So the Gemara, now the Gemara explains, that's the Braisa. So the Gemara explains, or Rabbi Chisda explains, that the master, that's the first master. I'm sorry. Yeah, the first master that we, the first master is the Tanakhama, the first author. He holds that a ransom, what it means by ransom is you pay money. You are obligated to pay, in other words, when your ox gores, and your ox is a mu'ud, means it's gored two or three times, so then you are obligated to pay to the descendants, to the children, or whoever inherits the person that was killed, the victim, so you have to pay them money. You owe them money because you killed it through the ox. You can't get the death penalty, so you have to pay them money. It's an obligation. It's a money obligation. That is what the Tanakhama holds. Because he says you evaluate the victim. What do you mean you evaluate the victim? The victim means because you must pay his value. Okay? But Rabbi Shmuel says, that's the second master, he says that you should evaluate the mazik, the one that did the damage. Well, you're not paying for him. If you're paying money, you're paying for the value of the victim. Why should he pay money? Why should you pay the value of the mazik, of the person that did the damage? Why should you pay that? It doesn't make sense. The answer is, it makes sense if the purpose of the paying is not because of money, but the purpose of the paying is for atonement or forgiveness from God. You understand? So therefore, he wants to say that the author of the Braisa that said before that it's Kufra Kapara, that the ransom is forgiveness, that author of that Braisa is Rabbi Yishmael. That is what Rav Chisda is saying. In other words, if it's money that I'm paying, I should pay for the damage that I did. What's the damage I did? I killed the victim, or my ox killed the victim. So I should pay for the victim. That would be money. But if I pay, if my ox did the damage and I paid for myself, that doesn't make sense. I'm not paying. I should pay the damage that I did. The answer is the reason why I'm paying a pidyon or a ransom for myself is because I want forgiveness. And that, in other words, from God. So it's not for the purpose of paying for money, for paying the family of the victim what they lost, but it's paying for my forgiveness from God, so I pay my my evaluation. You always pay the victim's family. Whichever it is, you pay the victim's family. But the question is, why are you doing it? Are you doing it for the value of the victim to give to them? It's a money thing. The Torah obligated you money? Or really, no. The Torah just says you need a forgiveness from God, and this is the way to get the forgiveness. This is the interpretation of Rav Chisda. Okay? Okay, once again. The Braisa says that when it says by the ox, by the story, by the situation of the ox, the ox is a mu'ud and it gores a human being, then he should pay a ransom. So the Braisa says, when it says he should pay a ransom, who's the he? Okay? who do you pay? So the Tanakhama says that he is the value of the victim. And Rabbi Yishmael says it's the value of the assailant. The assailant over here is the one that owned the ox that killed a person. We're calling him the assailant. Once again, we're talking about the guy, the one who pays is the assailant. But who we are evaluating, what he pays. How much he pays is who we're evaluating. So the Tanakhama says we evaluate the victim, and the Rabbi Shmuel says we evaluate the assailant. Now Rav Chisda comes along and explains what that means. He interprets that. He says, if you evaluate the victim, so it must be that you are responsible for damages that you caused the victim. In this case, you killed him, so you pay the people that inherit the victim, you pay them the value of what they lost. Okay? They lost the victim, so you pay the value of the victim, you're paying the damages. Okay? If this explains Rabbi Yishmael and says, why does he say you pay according to the assailant? Because it's not that he's paying money, it's not a monetary thing, but the money only represents an atonement from God, that he needs an atonement, and the way he gets the atonement is he pays for his life. He deserves the death penalty. He should get the death penalty because he allowed his animal free. But we don't give the death penalty when an animal kills. So he ransoms his own life by paying the value of his own life. Is that clear? The money he pays to the inheritors of the victim, but the reason why he pays them is not because he's paying them for their loss, but he's paying them for his atonement. Why did Rabbi Chisda say this to begin with? Because we had a brisa above that spoke about four different cases of Adam Zomer. The third case that is mentioned in that brisa is that you don't pay Kofar, the Adam Zomer, if they testified that a certain ox was gored, that was a muad, and he gored. So then we found that they are liars. They do not pay a ransom. Why do they not pay a ransom? Because atonement is only for the sin of the goring. You did a different type of sin. You can't have atonement. It's a different type of atonement that you have to do. For each sin, there's a different atonement. Okay? So therefore, we can't give the same atonement. So the author of that brisa cannot be the Tanakhama, the first author of the second brisa. Because he says you're paying for damages, so that they could get obligated. We could obligate the Adam Zomer for damages. Right? But it can't, so the only author it could be of that brisa that said that Adam Zomer don't pay a ransom, the only author to be is Rabbi Yishmael, who according to Rabbi Chisda holds that he holds that the money that you're paying is for forgiveness. And their forgiveness is different than the assailant's forgiveness. The first brisa, we don't know what the punishment is. In the first brisa, what the punishment for the Adam Zomer. All we're saying is that they do not get what they wanted to give to the victim, to the defendant. They do not get that. That's all we're saying. What he gets, we don't know. The Tanakhama would say he does get what he wanted to give to the defendant. But according to Rabbi Yishmael, we don't know what according to the facts that we have from this Gemara, we do not know what the Adam Zomer will get. We're going back to the first brisa, okay? The case is two witnesses come and say the defendant's ox killed George. Okay? And therefore we are obligating this person, the owner of the ox, we're obligating to pay George's family. Okay? Then we find out that these two witnesses are Adam Zelman. Okay? Now the question is, do they pay what they want, what they obligated George to pay? Or what they obligated the defendant to pay. Right? So the brisa of number one, the first brisa says that no, they do not pay. Why don't they pay? Why don't the Adam Zelman pay? Because they hold that what the defendant would have paid is kapara. It's a forgiveness. Okay? Therefore, it's not damages, it's forgiveness. That's what that brisa says. So now between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yishmael of the second brisa, who has to be the author of the first brisa? Rabbi Yishmael, because Rabbi Yishmael is the only one that says that a ransom is kapara, forgiveness. According to the Tanna Kamma, who says that it is damages, that you're paying for damages, according to the Tanna Kamma, you would just pay, the Adam Zelman would pay the defendant, because it's just money that they could do. But kapara they can't pay, because the kapara, is kapara means I really deserve to die, and God says in exchange for your life, pay money. Pay money for exchange for your life. Okay? So therefore that can only be where? In the case that the Torah says that money is kapara, that money is forgiveness. But Adam Zelman were not forgiving with money. So therefore, since it will not kapara, since the Adam Zelman do not have kapara or forgiveness, so therefore the Adam Zelman, we cannot do to the Adam Zelman what they wanted to do to the defendant. In other words, the Adam Zelman, their sin is lying. But the person that we're talking about in the second brisa is they have violated by allowing their ox freedom to kill. So it's two different sins, and therefore there's two different forgivenesses. So if it's forgiveness, I can't carry it over from redemption of the ox to the redemption or forgiveness of the Adam Zelman, and I can't carry it over.